I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s,
she looked like a million bucks,
scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
Gwyneth Paltrow worked for a day in the River Cafe kitchen. She arrived early, dressed in professional chef whites, ready to cook. Gwyneth is the only chef ever to have asked to clean and cook fresh anchovies, and for 3 hours, she did.
I learned a lot that day. I mean, you know, just when you're a home cook, you don't think about precision and like repetitively turning out something that's perfect and exactly the same over a course of many hours.
Didn't Jamie Oliver come in when you were there?
Yes.
You know, so what is Gwyneth? Quite a few people said, what is Gwyneth Paltrow doing in your kitchen? We said she's frying anchovies, you know, so that was it was. This memory speaks to how professional Gwyneth is. An Oscar-winning actor, she built Goop from a simple newsletter into an influential and uplifting business with energy, elegance, and strong values. Another memory. 10 years ago, just after the death of our son Beau, I asked Gwyneth if she might surprise the River Cafe team and sing one song for them at our Christmas party to thank them for their care and concern for me. Gwyneth not only said yes, she sang four songs, danced with everyone, and stayed to the very end. In the River Cafe history, we still talk about the time Gwyneth Paltrow came to sing. I admire Gwyneth for being a brave, smart entrepreneur. I respect Gwyneth as a writer of recipes. Most of all, I love Gwyneth for being there with me that night and here with me today.
Oh boy, I wasn't expecting that. That was so beautiful. Thank you.
Gwyneth, would you like to read the recipe?
I would love to. One of my favorites from the River Cafe, zucchini free tea. 500 grams zucchini, 1 liter sunflower oil. For the batter, 150 grams of plain flour, 3 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 3 tablespoons warm water, 3 egg whites, organic. Cut the zucchini into 5 millimeter thick ovals, then cut them into thick matchsticks. For the batter, sieve the flour into a bowl, make a well in the center, pour in the olive oil, and stir to combine. Loosen, adding enough warm water to make a batter the consistency of double cream. Heat the oil in a high-sided pan to 190 degrees Celsius. Beat the egg whites until stiff and fold into the batter. Dip the zucchini in the batter. Fry in batches in the hot oil until golden and crisp. Serve immediately.
So when you make, do you make zucchini, do you fry? Do you do zucchini fritti?
All the time.
Yeah.
It's Apple's, one of Apple's favorite foods is zucchini fritti.
Yeah. And they're so good, aren't they? Especially when, so one thing also you can do with zucchini that are slightly larger, I think, because the way we do it of cutting it into rounds and then cutting into strips may make it easier. Do you grow them here?
No, in back east on Long Island in the summer. We have tomatoes and zucchini for days and days and days.
And flowers?
They're so delicious. Yeah. Except I have to say, and I'm probably, this is probably really unpopular, but I like mozzarella in them more than ricotta in them.
I don't put any cheese in them.
You
don't?
It's
interesting. No, I never have.
That's smart.
Because I just love having them, absolutely, just the flour, and the kids fry them, and then you hold them by the stem and you just eat them.
So if we were going to start at the beginning, yes. What is the beginning? Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born here in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. Mm. We kind of went back and forth between New York City and Santa Monica a lot. I did a lot of preschool in New York City, and I did first and third grades in New York City while my mother was on Broadway. Yeah. And then the bulk of the rest of elementary school here, and then moved permanently to New York City when I was 11.
Can you remember the kitchens as we were talking perfectly. About food? Okay, describe the kitchens. Were they very different, the LA house and the New York
The kitchens
apartment?
Were very different. So our kitchen in Los Angeles here had a brick floor, red brick floor, mm. and a tile counter, mm. sort of like very country kitchen. Lots of windows, and you could see the backyard and the pool. And we were in there a lot. I mean, I think with every house, you're in the kitchen. More than anywhere. Our New York kitchen was on the ground floor. We grew up in a townhouse, almost no windows, but we had a big fireplace in the kitchen, which mm. was really nice. And it was more of a modern kitchen. It had been done by a Swedish architect, so it was kind of minimal. And
who cooked?
Well, when I was little, I remember, my mom cooked. My dad started cooking a lot, but that was later. He got very into cooking kind of when we were older teenagers. But we had an au pair that would cook. My mom would cook. It was kind of like a group effort in the kitchen. But my mom was always like, she loves food, but she would get sort of stressed cooking, you know, whereas my dad was like, thought it was really fun. My mom, I don't think she found it so relaxing.
And also, you just mentioned that she was in theater. Nights. Yeah. So what was that like?
So she would come home late after the theater, which when I was older was really nice. I remember when I was in high school and she would finish a play and come home and I would still be awake and we would kind of have a chat, which was some of my favorite memories of growing up in New York. And or she was doing Shakespeare in the Park and I would walk down Central Park to go visit her and watch her. So it was really a wonderful thing having a mother so steeped in the arts in New York and with all of the friends and, you know, the artists singing around the piano. And, you know, it was really a great way to grow up.
But would she have eaten, do you think? I often ask actors who are acting in a play, do they eat before the play? Do they eat after the play? Do they eat during? And everyone varies.
Yeah.
Would she eat afterwards?
I think she would generally eat before unless she had friends coming. Mm. It's sort of an occupational hazard to eat after. I did a play in London, I think in maybe 2002. Mm-hmm. And I ate every night after the play and I gained about 15 pounds. Yeah.
There is also that thing when you go to see somebody in a play and then they go, you know, Ralph Fiennes does that. It's always dinner afterwards. Yeah. And you do see the kind of fatigue and then letting go and probably eating too much late at night.
I know.
But then eating before you might go on. Did you feel stuffed when you went on to the
play? Yeah, I couldn't. I couldn't eat before. I was too nervous to eat before. Yeah. So I would always end up eating after and go to Jay Shiki and eat, you know, have a bottle of wine and French fries and some kind of oyster.
And back to New York and back to growing up with a mother who was acting. And what was your father doing?
He was making TV shows. Oh. So he was making shows here and in New York and doing a lot of traveling back and forth and then kind of settled in New York. And that was great when he was with us all the time. And, but I don't remember him really being in the kitchen until he had kind of slowed down how prolifically he was making TV shows. And when he kind of turned everything down a notch is when he really got into cooking.
And would you have meals around the table together? Would you and Jake and
Always.
Your parents sit down?
Yeah.
What were they like?
They were really nice. I mean, I think we felt special being included at the dinner table, even though it was a nightly event. It felt, you know, like if they had friends over, we sat with them at the table and had long conversations. It's something that I've carried on with my kids as well. You know, we always have dinner all together as a family, no phones allowed at the table, and you get into great discourse with them and hear what they think about things. And I think my father made me feel that I was valuable during those dinners because he really elicited our opinion. He asked questions and my brother and I were very much a part of the conversation.
What was his background?
Well, it's interesting, you know, because touching on what you were saying before, he grew up without money. He grew up on Long Island and they were, you know, they were kind of a working class, moving up into middle class Jewish family, but they didn't have a lot of disposable income, and they didn't go out to eat. So when my father finally made it, you know, like his, and he loved food and all the beautiful things in life, you know, he loved beautiful fabrics and paintings, and, you know, he would take me to every museum in the world and we would walk for hours. And I think food for him was really an expression of life's beauty and our blessings and good fortune to be able to eat something that was fresh and delicious and really well conceived and thought about. And he was so proud that, you know, we ate oysters and, you know, things that he hadn't come across until really later in his life. And I always remember, and I wrote about this in my first book, that when we would get into the car to go out to dinner, like no matter how many times we had gone, like he was so excited. Yeah. It was like the greatest thing of all time that we were going out to dinner.
So, I think that it's interesting because people that I've talked to, many of them measure their success in the ability to eat well. It's fascinating that people, you know, when they were able to go to restaurants and choose something, that they weren't worried about how much it cost. Or, you know, Paul McCartney saying that he always thought wine was terrible because he only had really, really cheap wine. And then when he was, you know, able to go to a restaurant, somebody bought him a fabulous bottle of wine. He kind of understood what it had meant to work hard and what he could do.
Right.
And even just going to restaurants. So going back to your dad, what were his parents like?
They were New Yorkers. Mm. They had, so my grandfather's grandfather had come from Poland. They were from a long line of rabbis, and they were all Ashkenazi Jews from Poland and Russia, kind of Belarusian. And they were, you know, had grown up, my grandfather had grown up in a tenement on the Lower East Side and fought his way into military school so he could, you know, have three square meals a day and learn. He craved discipline and order, and so he was very proud of himself that he had put himself, you know, had gotten himself in that position. And they were great. And my grandmother, my dad's mom, was a great, I mean, I loved eating at her house.
Did you? Grandmothers are really important in food stories.
I mean, she made brisket and that it was like the best brisket in the world. And then she also let us have junk food, which we were not allowed from my mother. So, you know, we would go to stay with them and there would be Fruit Loops and I would be out of my mind. You know, Jake and I would be eating Wonder Bread with French's mustard and a slice of tomato and lettuce. And we thought it was the most delicious thing of all time. So,
do you have a recipe for brisket?
I do.
And what about your mother's mother? Did she have-
My mother's mother was a fantastic cook and entertainer. She was a really scary person, but she made the best food. I'll never forget the things that, you know, really sort of like 50s food that she made all throughout the 80s, you know. So the best deviled eggs in the whole world, the best Christmas dinners with like her stuffing and her spreads would be this whole table full of the most delicious food, and it was only her. You know,
she did it on her own.
On her own, chopping and cooking, and her food was amazing. She was a really great cook.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You grew up in this house where your father loved to take you to restaurants and to eat, and your mother cared for you and came home after theater with stories. And then you left home. And did you cook after you left home for yourself? Or did you go home to eat? Or
That's when I really started to learn how to cook. Yeah. I graduated from school in New York City, and I went to UC Santa Barbara all the way across the country. And my father was in Santa Monica a lot, and I would come home for weekends or, you know, for some good food, and we would cook together a lot. Mm. And that's when we both really started cooking. And that's when the Food Network was just amazing and really instructional and tactical. And we would watch, you know, the Food Network and learn things and try them out. Or we would go out to, there was a restaurant in Venice that was kind of legendary called 72 Market Street. And we would go there or Chinois on Main, which is a Wolfgang Puck French fusion Chinese restaurant that I still love to this day. So there's like a couple places that that he loved that we would go to, but we also cooked a lot.
And so do you do that with your children? Do you cook with them?
I do.
A lot. Both of them or?
I cook for both. I cook, you know, Apple's really interesting because now she's kind of very independent and she likes to cook for herself a lot. Mm. So, and she's vegetarian and she has like really specific food ideas, which is so great. And I would say what she asked me to make still for her the most is lemon pasta. She went through a real like fettuccine Alfredo phase. And breakfast potatoes, she asked. That's probably what she asked me to make the most these days. And then Moses, you know, during the week, I don't have time to cook very much, but I cook kind of all weekend long. Mm. And I really love it, especially Friday nights. It's like how I transition from my week to being like a woman in a body.
Yeah. And do they cook with you? Or do they?
Yeah, they do.
You cook for them?
I mean, Apple will definitely cook with me. Moses will help.
Yeah.
But I mostly cook for them. I mean, I think they like being, especially because when we were living in London and I was, before I started Goop, I cooked all the meals. Yeah, and so they have nostalgia around me cooking them all the meals. Yeah. And so I think especially Moses, sometimes he's like, why aren't you making me more food?
Food is love.
I know, it's true.
But do you think that your interest in cooking for them does come from your own childhood? Or
I do. Because it was such an unabashed expression of my father's love for us. Like there was no denying it. And when someone is so excited about like the sear on their baby back ribs, you know, and like, look at this, look what I did. You know, it's so imbued with love that you can't, it's undeniable. And so you learn it as a love language. I just had this weekend, I had a house full of people at our house in Santa Barbara and I was making all these different breakfasts and, you know, my friends are like, oh my God, we feel so terrible. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is my love language. Yeah. Like, I'm so happy doing this. Yeah.
Did you travel with your parents? Did you go to Italy or Spain or France?
We never went to Italy until, you know, the first time I ever went to Italy with my father, he was when he died.
He died in Florence, didn't he?
He died in Rome. And we were doing our first kind of road trip after my 30th birthday. And he kind of died on me, which... complicated the trip
Does it complicate Italy for you? Yeah.
It did complicate Italy for me for a long time. Yeah. I didn't go back for 10 years. And when we were on our road trip and I found out that he was sick and he had been coughing up blood. And I said, we have to go to the hospital. You know, he'd been hiding it from me because he really wanted to finish our trip. Mm. And I was like, this is absurd. We are going to the hospital. And he was like, no, we got to get to the Splendido. He really was trying. And I was like, we're not going we're going to the hospital. And he ended up dying. And then I had a real aversion to Italy for a long time. And then very sweetly, Chris Martin, my first husband, on my 40th birthday, 10 years later, and I was having a lot of anxiety about it anyway, because I think turning 40, I mean, I'm about to turn 50 and I kind of don't give a but 40, I was 40, like, yeah. Really had so much anxiety about it. Mm. And by that point I had the two kids and we got on a plane and I didn't know where we were going. And we, all of a sudden I realized we were landing in Genoa and that we were going to the Splendido. Which was so sweet. It was such a nice surprise. Completion. But Jake was with me and my two best friends, Mary and Julia, who've been my best friends since I was 4 and one since I was 11. They were with me and my father was like a father to them too. Mm-hmm. So it ended up being a really beautiful experience that we all got to be there and kind of come full circle. And now we bought a little farmhouse in Umbria. So
where?
Just south of the Tuscan border.
Great food in Umbria. You have the black truffles in the fall. You have lentils and, boar. It's great.
I know. Yeah. It's a really special place. So I'm excited to spend more time there and to learn some Italian. But
What about Spain or France?
Spain? So France... Well, I kind of have told this like now it's kind of a famous story about my dad taking me. My mom was filming something in London when I was 10. We still lived in Los Angeles and we all made the trip over to visit her. And then my dad took me to Paris for the weekend and just he and I, and we stayed at the Ritz and we went to the Pompidou, we went to the Louvre, we went to all the museums. Mm-hmm. And my main thing was that I wanted to eat French fries, like French fries.
Pommes frites.
So that was the first thing we did when we checked into the hotel is that I ordered French fries. And he took me all around. You know, we were eating all kinds of things. And on the way back to London, he said, do you know why I took you to Paris? Just you and I. And I said, no. And he said... because I wanted you to see Paris for the first time with a man who will always love you no matter what. So sweet.
I mean, what you've been talking about is memories of a man who loved food, loved you, wanted to take you and indulge in new experiences to do with eating and cooking and spending time with you. And I think that, that is about what we do. Food is memory and food is love, isn't it? It's
absolutely
really, and that's what you're doing with your children and absolutely. What we keep doing and your grandmother. So many people I've talked to really talk about their grandmothers, because I think, again, I do it with my grandchildren. I know that, if you're a working mother, you're trying to get through the day or it's like a struggle. And the grandmother is a place you want them to remember your food. You want them to spoil them and give them loops, fruit loops, and also a recipe that they'll cook when they're gone.
That's true. I often think about the food legacy of a family and what dishes go from generation to generation. Yeah. And there's also seems to be such a specific flavor profile. It's like if I cook something, my kids like the way I cook something as opposed to anybody else, even if it's, like they're, we're all following the same recipe.
Of course.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Should we just talk about the food that you're cooking with Goop, or that you want us all? Because you have had such an influence on the way we eat, you know, the way we live, the way we buy, the way we collect, the way we treat ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's been probably the steepest learning curve of my life, and it's also a marathon. You know, it's been years of building a business and not having any idea what I was doing, not knowing how to monetize a business, and, you know, been through so many highs and lows and learnings and incredibly painful mistakes and real triumphs that, you know, are little but meaningful to us. And so, but I do think that the cultural impact is, it's an important thing to contribute, right? If you feel whatever you're trying to do in the world, that you authentically are trying to, you know, connect somebody to something good or that will be beautiful or uplifting. It's a very fulfilling job in a lot of ways to have. And so it's really fun right now because we kind of in this last year launched something called Goop Kitchen, which is only still here in Los Angeles, but I think we're going to expand quickly, which is not a restaurant. It's just being able to deliver on those brand values of getting really high quality, organic, local, seasonal food to people's plates, because the quickest road to feeling better is just watching the quality of the food that you're eating. Like, is it nutrient dense? Is it minimally processed? I mean, you know, that's why you're such a big inspiration to me, is everything you make is so ingredient driven and so delicious. I remember when I first started coming to the restaurant so many years ago, gosh, 25 years ago, I mean, so long ago, and just thinking, oh my gosh, you can see everything, like the beauty of, you know, that dish, I forget the name of it, but you have the sort of fava beans and artichokes and it's like
vino.
The spring. Yes.
Yeah, Roman. Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh, it's all so visible. And you see it in your mind coming straight from the garden right onto the plate and just enhancing all of the beautiful aspects of nature and great olive oil. And there you go, you know?
Yeah. I always think that if you cook with few ingredients that we do, and I think in Italy you do, I love going to Paris and having a beurre blanc over a piece of turbot with spinach and morel mushrooms. But there's something about going to Italy and having a grilled piece of fish with three herbs and a bit of olive oil, as you say, the vegetables, which just depend on themselves. You can't mask it, you know.
I mean, what was it like for you to open the River Cafe in London at that time where, you know, it wasn't like that? I mean, there wasn't an ingredient-forward food culture.
Yeah. And when Rose and I started, she had lived in Lucca for 5 years, and Richard's mother was a cook from Trieste who then went to Florence and then came to London probably 39. And we always say that she used to wander around London coming from Florence, looking for a view. She was always trying to find the Piazza Michelangelo somewhere in London. She's a woman who said to me once on her deathbed, she said, Ruthie, I want you to put She had amazing skin. And she said, I want you to put more cream on your face and less herbs on your fish. You know, that was her last
parting
words
salvo.
To me. And every time I put herbs on my fish, I was like, not too many. And every night I put more cream. But but I think that Rose and I thought, why can't we have the kind of food that we cooked and ate in Italy, but in London? And it was challenging. You know, we served a Papa Pomodoro and it had tomatoes and bread and basil, and that was it. And somebody would say, in those days, am I paying £4.50 for a bit of bread and tomato? But now I always put, you know, the travel, people traveled more and more to Europe. Mm. And, you know, Freddie Laker with his planes where you could go cheaply or whatever they were opened up Europe. Unfortunately, right now, because if you want me to be political, Brexit is closing the doors. But in those days, we were all going and opening the doors and seeing what food was like. And so I think that really changed things. And so slowly.
Quite iconoclastic, that kind of simplicity of food?
Yeah, I think other people were doing it. You know, Rolly Lee at Kensington Place did a more French version of it, and Alistair Little, and people also changed restaurants. I think everywhere. I think give credit to Wolfgang Puck, you know, going from Ma Maison to making pizzas at Spago. It's like you could either dress up and go to a restaurant and be terrified, or you could, but eat very well.
Right.
Or you could go to the local Greek or trattoria and not eat very well, but have a great time. We thought, why can't you come and have a great time and eat well? You know, and I think a lot of people were doing that.
Right.
So we learned more. We started knowing nothing. So, you know, we learned as we grew. There's a lot to do with food. It's love, it's history, it's memories, it's politics, but it's also comfort.
Yeah.
And so if I were to ask you for our last question in this beautiful room on this beautiful day, what, Gwyneth, would be your comfort food?
Pasta.
Ah.
I love pasta. And I love that it can be the most laborious, you know, hand rolling out and stuffing something that you are pureeing, like most intense all day episode. Or it can literally be a sauce that you make in the time it takes for the water to boil and cook the pasta, which are my favorite. There's some garlic, anchovy, you know, chili oils, oil. But it always has the same result, which is just tastes delicious and it makes you feel so good. It makes you feel full, but also, I don't know, there's also an elegance to pasta, and I find it really just the perfect meal, pasta and a glass of red wine.
Well, I'm waiting for you in London.
Okay.
You don't have to fry anchovies. We'll just have pasta and red wine.
I want to get back behind that fryer.
Put you back in the kitchen. Come back in the kitchen. Okay. We miss you there. Thank you. To visit the online shop of The River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.